All right, I'm going to try my very best today because the honest truth, Numbers 33 is a very laborious time of pronouncing a lot of names again. Who is going to do the pronunciation or enunciation of the names? As soon as we find someone who is...
These are the journeys of the children of Israel who went out of the land of Egypt by their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. And Moses wrote down the starting points of their journeys at the command of the Lord. And these are their journeys according to their starting points. They departed from Mamre in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month. On the day after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of all the Egyptians. For the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn, whom the Lord had killed among them. Also, on their gods, the Lord had executed judgments. Then the children of Israel moved from Ramses and camped at Succoth. They departed from Succoth and camped at Etham, which is on the edge of the wilderness. They moved from Etham and turned back to Pi-Hiroth, which is east of Baal-Zephon, and they camped near Migdol. They departed from before Hiroth, and passed through the midst of the sea into the wilderness, went 3 days' journey in the wilderness of Etham, and camped at Merah. They moved from Merah and camped to Elim. At Elim there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, so they camped there. They moved from Elim and camped by the Red Sea. They moved from the Red Sea and camped in the wilderness of Sin. They journeyed from the wilderness of Sin and camped at Dophka. They departed from Dophka and camped at Elush. They moved from Elush and camped at Rephidim, where there was no water for the people to drink. They departed from Rephidim and camped in the wilderness of Sinai. They moved from the wilderness of Sinai and camped at Kibroth Hattaavah. They departed from Kibroth Hattaavah and camped at Hazeroth. They departed from Hazeroth and camped at Rithmah. They departed from Rithmah and camped at Rimmon Perez. They departed from Rimmon Perez and camped at Libna. They moved from Libna and camped at Rissah. They journeyed from Rissah and camped at Kelathah. They went from Kelathah and camped at Mount Sefer. They moved from Mount Sefer and camped at Herodah. They moved from Herodah and camped at Mechaloth. They moved from Mechaloth and camped at Tehath. They departed from Tehath and camped at Terah. They moved from Terah and camped at Michah. They went from Mithkah and camped at Hashmonah. They departed from Hashmonah and camped at Maseroth. They departed from Maseroth and camped at Beni Jaakan. They moved from Beni Jaakan and camped at Hor Hagidgad. They went from Hor Hagidgad, and camped at Jothbatha. They moved from Jothbatha and camped at Abranah. And they departed from Abranah and camped at Ezron Geber. They moved from Ezron Geber and camped in the wilderness of Zin, which is Kadesh. They moved from Kadesh and camped at Mount Hor, on the boundary of the land of Edom. Then Aaron the priest went up to Mount Hor at the command of the Lord, and died there in the 14th year after the children of Israel had come out of the land of Egypt, on the first day of the 5th month. Aaron was 120 years old when he died on Mount Hor. Now the king of Arad, the Canaanite, who dwelt in the south in the land of Canaan, heard of the coming of the children of Israel. So they departed from Mount Hor and camped at Zalmanah. They departed from Zalmanah and camped at Punon. They departed from Punon and camped at Oboth. They departed from Oboth and camped at Ish-Abrim at the border of Moab. They departed from Ijim and camped at Dibon Gad. They moved from Dibon Gad and camped at Almon Diblathaim. They moved from Almon Diblathaim and camped in the mountain of Abrim, before Nebo. They departed from the mountains of Abrim and camped in the plains of Moab by the Jordan, across from Jericho. They camped by the Jordan from Beth Jeshmoth as far as Abel Acacia Grove in the plains of Moab. Now the Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan, across from Jericho, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, When you have crossed the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you, destroy all their engraved stones, destroy all their molded images, and demolish all their high places. You shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land and dwell in it, for I have given you the land to possess. And you shall divide the land by lot as an inheritance among your families. To the larger you shall give a larger inheritance, and to the smaller you shall give a smaller inheritance. There everyone's inheritance shall be whatever falls to him by lot. You shall inherit according to the tribes of your fathers. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall be that those whom you let remain shall be irritants in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they shall harass you in the land where you dwell. Moreover, it shall be that I will do to you as I thought to do to them.
Okay, before we get started, what is this chapter telling us? I'm sorry, what?
About their journeys.
About their journeys, okay. A lot of journeys.
Richard, did they have to take down the tent when they moved? Did they have the tent system? They had
they had a tent. Now, there are two ways in which the number of encampments are there, and some count that as 42, some count it as 43, because they count in another place. And others, you'll see, you'll just count 40. We'll get to that point in a minute. So, what is the purpose behind all this? I'm sorry, what?
History.
Okay. They have specific meanings. I've not been able to go through all of them. Because there's so many of them, and there's so many different thoughts on how they stay. We'll get to about number ninth one on this list today, and go through that point. I don't think it'll finish this chapter at all. We'll have to go through again next week a little farther on it, because there's an awful lot of names here, and they have purposes behind them, and the history behind them. Because just remember what Jeff was telling us when he goes to the New Testament? There's a one-liner or two-liners. Okay? So sometimes read the New Testament and says, okay, let's go on with the story. But he's taking us back where it was, and we have a bigger picture, right? And the same thing kind of takes place with these names. Sometimes they're only listed in the book of Numbers, and so it doesn't tell us in much detail. But we'll start out trying to look at some of these today and hope to be able to expand on it more next week. This is a very laborious chapter, a lot of words, studying, and getting back to the concept of knowing history, what is the benefit of knowing the history? Now, we in our country, our school education of today's modern times, have neglected the history of the United States of America. Okay, and what happens is there's no identity. The younger generation does not identify with what took place in the Revolution, and they don't really have a history of what took place in the Civil War even. They only seem to remember the current ones. They don't have a history of what took place in World War I or II. Very seldom, hardly any of them know anything about the Korean War. They perhaps know a little more about the Vietnamese War because their parents perhaps had been involved in that particular war. And then they go farther. They remember the Iraq And now, of course, today is Afghanistan. I'm sorry. I don't mind my own history. But anyway, here in the Torah, God has put these names out there for us to, that we could be remembering of what it is all about. Now, it doesn't tell us in detail what took place in every one of these places, right? It does tell us somewhat of the insight now and then. And so we got to find out, okay, what is it that we should learn from this, and why would God waste, quote, his time, end of quote, listing all these names, all these locations? The number is very fascinating that there's another way of looking at it. There's 40 names that are listed at a specific point, a beginning point. From that point, it's 40. And it's very fascinating to know there's 40 names. 40 names are being listed here of the place where they had encamped. Now, I want to go through some words here that you already have heard, but some of you perhaps are not familiar with some of the words. Do you have a question? Anybody have questions before we begin? Your puzzledness on your face? A puzzledness? Okay. The word journey. Now, I've told you this before, but it's very fascinating. The Hebrew word for journey, it says there, and these are the journeys, okay? It means those who are pulling up stake, breaking camp, and setting out. That's what that word you have in the Hebrew there has to do with, breaking stake, moving up and moving out. And the next word is very fascinating, and it comes down and it says, and their armies. That's a very unusual word. In our military terminology, we know what an army is. But that's not what the Hebrew word is. The Hebrew word just comes from the very word, meanings those which go forth. That's all it means. And all you have translations every time it says armies, it means those who go forth. Yes, it can mean, of course, a military force. In this particular case, it's not. All of Israel was moving out and moving forward to a direction. And we kind of have a wonderful hindsight that we can say where they were going. Now, God doesn't tell us everything along the way which they didn't do right or that they did right, does he? We know that we have certain incidents we have there in Numbers of certain incidences that took place, but not an awful lot. He's just hitting us the primary big subject matters or a spirit that was needed to be purged from Israel before they entered into the Promised Land. And that's basically what this 40 years of them moving in was, to remove that from their presence. And we had, Daniel talked about the second circumcision that took place. In these 40 years, they didn't circumcise their sons. God didn't want them to circumcise their sons. Why? Well, because he had to do something else called roll back something. Roll back the reproach of Egypt. When he explained that, we won't go in there today. So we are in the process here. We're seeing these people are pulling out. They set out. They're pulling the stake up. And they're going forward. They're going in the direction that the tabernacle is going. Now, when we look at this thing, I'll try to explain a little bit. Let's go drop down here quickly to verse 3. I want to explain a word here that's not completely clear. It says Ramses, right? Now, that word does not mean what some people think it means. It does not mean child or the child of the son. It's a Hebrew word, or is it a Egyptian word? It's an Egyptian word. Many of the commentaries of old, they just made it sound like it meant that they are worshiping the sun. All right? Let me ask you a question. However, where were the house of Israel to live when they were in the land? Land of Goshen, all right? And there was a man, before they came there, he was one of the sons of Jacob. And who was it?
Joseph,
okay. Okay, we got that story. Good. Now, he became prime minister, second in command. But he married somebody. Do you remember who he married? Daughter from what? Okay. The priest of On. Where did the priest of On live? Where? Goshen. Lived in the land of Goshen. Now, his daughter's name, I can't remember exactly what it means, but it means a gift from God. That's the daughter's name. Okay? So, in our thinking, in our brain, in our ideas, we have a thing that all of Egypt had the same God. No, they didn't. They had multitudes of gods. They really did. Tremendous amount of them. Not all of them agreed with one another's gods. Now, the word Ramsey, and not in Hebrew or in English, it means Re created it. That's the Re, meaning sun, created it. Now, the word, you know, we have this word Re, and we have it translated as meaning S-U-N. It can mean that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not out there. But the priest of On, O-N, was the priest of a god named Re. No, I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying, think about this for just a minute. Because in that particular period of history, and it is history now, that Joseph was sent there in advance for 7 years of prosperity. Remember, that was his function. He married, and he had two kids, and their names were... Yeah, they weren't Egyptian, were they? Okay. And so we say, okay, why would he marry a pagan? He had no choice. Maybe it was given to him by whom? By the Pharaoh. Now, we always have a negative thing about the Pharaoh because we only think about the last one. Not all pharaohs are that way. Even, because it's just a title, someone who's responsible for the country, a leadership. So we look at this thing and we say, okay, Ray created it. Ray created what? Well, in that particular area, where is the area of Ramses? By the way, Ramses is not a city. Yes, there was a city there, but it's not a city. It's a territory. It's a territory, a very large territory. And so when they left from the city of Ramses, they still went to a place. Where did they go? They went where? Sukkah. Now, what on earth is that? What is it? Okay, it's a booth. Modern terminology. We know that it's a temporary dwelling. Okay, we got that. It's also a place where you store animals. Okay, it's like a barn. Could be. It could be like a, you know, where you put the cows in or the sheep in or whatever it is. In cold weather. Okay, we all know that. It has a place where the animals are to be kept. That's one of the many, many, many reasons for it. Now, when they left Ramses and they had to go someplace, they went to a place called Sukkah. You know what Sukkah means? Okay? It means a thicket. A covering. that is encaved with something. It's a covering that's fenced about. It's something that has got protection around about it. Okay? Yes, it was temporary. In this sense, we think of Sukkot as a temporary thing. But how big was this place? Was it just one little tiny tabernacle? Was no tabernacle. There was no tabernacle. Now, where did they take with them? They had all the animals, a lot of sheep, a lot of bulls, a lot of carts, horses pulling, donkeys pulling. So there's an awful lot of things going on. Do you think it's a kind of little small little cubby hole? Or do you think it was a place there that was where they were protected? What were they protected from? For who? The weather. Okay. It was a springtime time. Doesn't tell us, does it? All we know is that they were there, and it's a place in which they were to stay there for a short period of time. And then they did something. They journeyed. Or what did they do? Pulled up the stakes and moved out. They moved forward to the next location, which was where? What is Edom? Remember, God put them out of Ramses. Ray created it. He took it from there, and they went to a place called Sukkah, or Sukkot. Okay. Is that where God wanted them? Yes. That's where he took them. They went exactly where they're supposed to go. Who led them? Moses. Now the cloud. Where was the cloud? Where was the cloud? It was moving them. Okay. There was no tent. No big tabernacle, right? Now, as we go on with this story, we know it. You know, so this is a story of history. So when you go back and say, these names, these places, is what took place back then? What took place when Ramses, what happened there? Why did they leave Ramses so quick? Did they leave with a high hand, or did they leave depressed, saddened, crushed, devastated? They were delivered. They were delivered out of all that. See, so when you think about they left Ramses here, God is saying, do you remember what happened then? The Egyptians were dead. All the firstborn were dead. They were in total devastation. But not the Israelites. What did the Israelites leave behind? Their homes. They actually had homes. They didn't live in tents. They actually had homes. They had buildings. They lived in buildings. They didn't live on the earth like the theory of evolution, okay, then they lived on the earth. But they didn't. They're not. Theory of evolution doesn't exist. So we go back here and we say, okay, where is this story telling us? Why is that God wants us to go back and take, do you remember? Do you remember? Do you remember? Do you remember? First place you want to remember is Ramses. Second place you want to remember is Sukkot. Next thing you want to remember is Edom. What was Edom? Edge of the wilderness. What does Edom mean? We have to go with the word wilderness too, because it's very fascinating terminology. Most of you don't know what that word really means and where it came from. But, or if I have told you, you might have forgotten about it. We'll talk about that in a little while. So try to remember history. Now, Edom's on the edge of something, or the beginning of something. They're at the beginning of going into what's called wilderness. So Edom was the last place. And it really means their plowshares. They took their plowshares with them. They took their tools with them. Why would they take their tools with them?
So they could cut down and put it in their buggies and take it with them. They needed all that wood there.
plowshares? What are we going to do with them? They were going to take them to the land of Israel to plow the field so they could actually have food to grow, crops to grow. They took their tools with them. Unlike Sesame DeMille, they feared and fled and all that kind of stuff. They took with them all. Now, what other man took everything with him when he left? Abram. Abram took everything with him. He took everything he owned with him. He left nothing behind. Why? Because God's going to send him someplace and he had to do something with it, right? Well, that's true, but he's going forward. So what does that put with us? What does that put with you? What does it put with me? When we were to go someplace, what are we supposed to take with us? A what? Our tools. Our equipment. The things we work with. Now, I'm an engineer. My son's an engineer. We're not going to take our engineering skills with us, are we? Maybe. What I'm saying is, it's kind of fascinating that sometimes when God begins to do the calling, we think we're losing everything. Well, the Israelites, they lost their land, they lost their homes, they lost the buildings they lived in, but he took them someplace else. Now remember, he was going to get them there sooner, quote, quote, you know, quote. However, he had a 40-year plan for them. Now, let's continue on here now. So basically, what they count here is Ramses, number one, Sukkot, number two, and Etam is number three. Okay. We're counting. You know, they said there's 42 here. Sorry, what? It meant, or what? Okay, Egyptian derivation from it. Okay, it's actually a kittim or a fortress. It's a sewer. It's a great wall of Egypt. So it was the last borderline. It was the last place for that place to be. It was a community, a town, or whatever it was. I don't know exactly. But there, now you're going where there is nowhere to go. You're going into the wilderness. Okay? And of course, you know, they went and they went to this place where it's repeating here of Pahator, which means what? The god of what? And Baal Sephor. And they pitched their tent or went to the tent before Megiddo. Pahator means a mouth of a gorge, remember? Now it's listed here. First, remember that's where God took them. At that border, at the very edge, of what's called Egypt. Now they're moving eastward into a place called wilderness. And they journeyed all the way through what's called the Sinai Peninsula, all the way across until they hit this gorge, big opening place. Remember I showed you the pictures? I had a photograph of what place was at. So here's time to remind you. Now the places where they're at the edge of where? Where are they supposed to go from there? You remember the history there? No, that was... He went that way because of war. He didn't want them to face war yet. Because if they saw war, what would they do? Flee backwards. So now they can't flee backwards. Right? They can't. They're stuck. What happened at that gorge? They what? No. There's a lot of water there. In fact, there's so much water there. They had to go into it. Remember? They had to go into that water. Right? You forgot that. Crossing the Red Sea? That's where this was at. That's where they're at now. Okay. Okay. That's number four in the list. Basically, that they call it number four. But now the fascinating thing, they crossed over, right? Where was the first place they stopped? Do you remember? After they crossed over, they journeyed for 3 more days. There's no pitching, no tent pegs, nothing. They moved for 3 constant days, nonstop. What was the name of the place they went to? What happened there? Their water actually ran up at that point in time. 3 days, God just drained the water out of them. Okay. What happens after the third day of no water? What? You start dying really quick. Okay. That's a fascinating picture. 3 days and you're dead. And here God sends them to where? A place where the water would kill them. What was he trying to show them? Remember the story? What was the story? And then? Then what would God say? What? I am your healer. Oh. You see what history is valuable for? We've gone through these things pattern after pattern after pattern. And each place tells us what God did, what God is doing, how God acts, how God thinks. At the feast this year, I said, I wanted you to start thinking where God is doing with you as an individual person and watch what he's doing. Is he taking you to hell? Or is he giving you holiness? Do you see holiness inside yourself? Do you see purity inside yourself? Do you see God healing you inside yourself? Not physically flesh and blood, though that's a great blessing. Do you see him healing the things that were hurting you spiritually? Same picture, same story. We're going back in time of a physical thing that took place, which doesn't make sense to us. Throw a tree into the project, throw a seed, and all of a sudden the water's pure. What does water represent scripturally? Cleansing. What? The Spirit. Amazing thing is the Spirit. My Spirit will come down like what? And it'll cover the entire world like that covers the sea, covers the land. It's a lot of water, isn't it? Okay. So now in this process, I am your healer. He's going to heal you spiritually. Oh yes, don't get me wrong. You can call upon him to heal you physically. That's scripture's full of that. But understand internally that God is saying, I have taken you to a place where the water could kill you deliberately. Just to let you know, I'm going to heal you. That's funny, the tree was thrown in. Yes, Ellie.
It was also a picture when the Messiah comes on the scene that they can look back because they were drinking poisonous water and the Messiah, a tree, killed him, and then that made the water better or clean.
No. This guy over here, yeah. Dave said something that is called cleanliness or purity. It forces you, right? Okay? Do you remember what Yeshua said to his apostles before he died? How did they make him clean? By the words I have said to you. So we're at this place that he says, I'm going to clean you up because with my word you will be clean. Now the reason why we're going through a little bit laborious here, because it is history. It's time going back and saying, what took place back then? What took place back then? What took place back then? And how does that affect me? That was ancient times ago. I have no relationship to any of that. Well, God says, wait a minute, that's my word. I am the one that's cleaning you, and I've shown you in the past how I do those things. This is how I am. Let's go on to the next one. He went to the next one, and it was called, by the way, that was the first encampment after they crossed the Red Sea. The second encampment was a place called what? Elam. What does Elam mean? It's what? Palm trees. It's the plurality for palm trees. He took them from a place first that was going to kill them. He healed them. Now he's taken to a place that is incredibly a great blessing. Lots of water and a lot of palm trees. 70. Interesting number, of course. We won't go there today, but remember those seven things. And then from there, he moved on to another place called what? The Red Sea. What's the Red Sea? Why did he bring him back? Why did he take him from that place and bring him back to the location near the Red Sea? What was God showing? I'm sorry, what? Okay. What was the purpose? What was the incident that took place there? You remember? It doesn't tell us, does it? So he's journeying them back. Now he takes them to that place. My mind, I think, it reminds them, you know, you came from there, you know, the other side. You can't cross back over again. They've gone too far north. Now I'm back here, the Red Sea. They can't keep going. You can't go back, can't return. The water's not going to part for you to go back. I'm not taking you back. And of course, you know, they always wanted this wonderful food. But they weren't, manna had not come yet. Remember, manna has not come yet. All right? They go through said seed and goes into what's called. What's the next one? For the Red Sea, they encamped and went to where? Wilderness of sin. Now, don't get that confused with the English word. First of all, how many of you know what the word sin here means in Hebrew? There are two meanings. It either means clay, dirt, or thorns. Interesting. Thorns and dirt. There's thorns in the dirt. What are thorns? Remember what Daniel talked about there at the Feast of Tabernacles? Talked about thorns? Oh. What is that going to tell you? What does wilderness mean? Okay, I'm going to put it this way. I use a phrase quite often. Devarim Elohim. Wilderness means, comes from the word, to speak, to talk to you, to explain to you, to teach you. So I use the word wilderness. It sounds odd, doesn't it? We relate it to stupid translations. I mean, every time you really look at the word which says wilderness and actually look at the place where they actually were, it wasn't a desert. It was the land. And now God is talking with them, teaching them, leading them, guiding them. We talk about being in the wilderness, right? And it means like being alone. Well, yes, it is. It means be alone. Who are you alone with? God. Where? I mean, you're not in the cities? You're not with the community? So God says, okay, now I'm going to take you to a place where there's thorns and there's dirt, and I'm going to talk with you out there. You understand? That's kind of fascinating thing, isn't it? When you take a look at that word, that's interesting. And of course, he left there. And they went to the next place. It was the only place they found it so far in Numbers, and that's Dakar. And it really means to knocking. Or to beat. Either knocking or to beat. That's all I have from that word. And the next word is very fascinating. From knocking, or should we say beating, comes the next Hebrew word, and it's alash, alash, alash. What that alash means? When a woman makes bread, what does she do? She what? Needs it. I will need you. I'm going to do some work on you. Fascinating terminology, right? So he's puffing them down, build them up, puff it down, build them up. He's still working with the people. That's a very interesting word. I find it very fascinating that I will need you like I do bread. Okay, let's go on the next one. This interesting word. What's the next place? Okay, what does that mean? Do you remember where it happened there? A very important one. I'm sorry, what? Not what the word means. What?
No water.
No water, okay. See why history is important? The water again. What? What? What's that mean? You know what that word means? A place of rest or a place of stay, a place of resting place. That's what it means. Now, it comes from a verb. Something took place. It's a plurality, by the way. Did you notice the plural word? Okay. Something was taking place. There were two men at this place that did something. What did they do? They what?
Strange fire.
Okay. See how history is important, right? God says, I want you to remember this. Moses and Aaron, they're just two. There's two men did something. Who? You ever heard a guy named Hur? What did they do? They did something for Moses. What did they do? Okay, and they gave Moses a place to sit down and rest. While they held the hands up for him. That's what that word came from. That's what that word means. Yes, there was no water there, but they were at war. You remember that story now? So, Raphadim means, basically, support. Comes from the verb to support. So, one man supported one arm, and the other man supported the other arm, where Moses had the rod in his hand. But they also put a rock there for him to sit down. Now, when we look back on those times, we said, why would God bring in an army? Was it a sneak attack? Why did God bring in the army? What is it that they had to learn from that trip? I'm sorry, what? As soon as the rod went down, what was happening? They were losing. Now, people are still to look to whom? Moses. What does Moses represent here? God himself. Even God said, I'm going to make you an Elohim. So people learn to look at Moses and watch him. I'm not, you know, we can picture a battle, how it lasted, what it did, and how they fought. We don't know. They didn't show us in detail what took place. The story is telling us only one thing. Two men, two people, gave support to Moses to hold up and give him a place of rest, a dwelling place, a place that's nice and peaceful. He was tired, exhausted, and bushed. We're at war. And it was there all the way until the sun went down. A long time, isn't it? The battle would have began in the morning and would have lasted all night long. Ellie?
Isn't this kind of a picture of what God does to us from the very start through all the way of our 40 years or our period of time? He pulls us out of a mess. He covers us. And then he takes us to the edge of a disaster. And then we look around and say, ah, and he heals us with a board. And then we get to some trees. And then all at once we're in the wilderness all by ourselves. He knocks us, beats us. There are thorns that needs us. Finally gives us a place to
sit. You see a picture
down,
here?
But the we're praying
picture, but
we're
the
in
name,
trouble.
The place they've been.
Yeah.
So God's telling us something with all the places he took them. He just didn't take them because he wanted to harass them. He wanted to tell us something. It's written there for us to try to do something. We're to learn history and how not the Israelites lived, not how the Israelites did, what the Israelites didn't do, but what God did, why he sent them there, and what he was doing with the places he was sent there and for them to learn and to do and how God works. I have been trying my very best to try to picture and see everything that took place in the Torah where God is involved in every incident. And this one is a big one. 40 years, every day for 40 years, he was involved with it. Right? Pretty big, pretty long time, didn't you think?
Okay.
Now, that's David. Bill.
I forget how long ago it was Daniel was talking about. He mentions how God works in cycles.
Yeah.
I found that really interesting.
Yeah.
Where it keeps coming back.
God has a very distinct pattern telling us and leading us to someplace. Now, when we went to the book of Exodus, there was not that many named places, was it? Not very few. It's only seven places were named. Only seven. Now we're getting more details, a whole lot more. But only seven. What was the pattern there? Why? What was he taking them to? The story there, pattern there is a pattern. God's taking them. And there's certain places he took them, and there's certain things took place at those particular point in time, including, of course, you know, the manna had to come down. And But as we keep going here, something else took place. How God works. He's cleaning them up, and we need to know that God's cleaning us up. And volunteer ourselves to be able to do that. Or be humble enough to say, thank you, God. Then they went back to a place called Wilderness of Sinai. Same word, wilderness. Okay. What does Sinai mean? What?
The hedge about.
Thorns and thistles. The hedge about, basically. So what was given there in Mount Sinai? The Ten Commandments, the big, huge hedge. They said, stay within this hedge. Don't depart from that hedge. That's what they're called commandments, by the way. Very interesting. You call the word commandments, not statutes or laws or ordinations or things to do in order. That came later. And so we have this thorny place, which is full of, it's a place to stay and remain there. Remain within those commandments. Then they left from there. They went to another place, which is a difficult word sometimes to pronounce. Kivot. Ha chava. Kivot ha chava. Kivot ha tava. That's a weird word, isn't it? You know what it means? You see why God listed this one? Because something took place at that location. What? Graves. Oh, graves. He took them to a place and they had to dig holes in the ground and bury their dead. What's the second word mean? Do you remember? Huh?
Love or desire?
It's lust. A place they lusted and graves were dug for them. What did they lust for? They went, yeah, right. They came to the quails. Remember that story? Okay, and God sent it to them, and it was so much they couldn't even eat them all. And before they finished eating, I didn't say how many died, but an awful lot of them died. So the place became known, the grave of lust. Now, shouldn't that kind of lust know something about how God works? When you desire so much, you want so much, be careful. God may just give it to you. And then he just may take your life. Wait a minute. A loving, compassionate, all-forgiving, all-merciful. What do you think he was upset about? I'm sorry, what?
Ingratitude.
Ingratitude, okay. Oh, they didn't get tired of the manna until they entered into the promised land. There, that's when they got tired of the manna, when they entered the promised land. I'm sorry, what?
Complaining.
Murmuring. But about what? They didn't want to kill their own animals, number one. Though they could. They just lusted for all that wonderful things that was in Egypt. Apparently, I don't know, don't ask me, have no idea. Where did the quails come from? The what?
God.
No?
God.
Great. Where did he send them from?
Egypt.
He sent them from the sea. You know that place called you crossed over? Oh, where did all those quails come from? Probably Egypt. You really want them? Here they are. They came from the sea. Oh, that's fascinating. You mean birds that came out of the water? No. They came from the sea was there. They came from there. Now, what does that tell you? They were looking back and wanting the things they once used to have. When we start walking with God, some things you have a problem with, we have a problem with as individuals, and this particular group, a whole group, they wanted to live like they used to live. They wanted the wonderful things of life. They wanted the better things. They wanted the things that were just so wonderful back there. Yes, they had to work for a living, but at least they had all that wonderful, wonderful food, all the comforts of home. I'm sorry, what? They had their own houses. They could grow their own leeks. They could grow their own food. They could grow barley. They could grow wheat. They could grow the things like the turnips, all that kind of stuff, you know. Pumpkins? I don't know pumpkins back there. I'm just throwing that in there because of this particular time of year for us. But you understand what's going on? You see a picture here? I'm sorry, what?
He says, you want to go back? I'll take you back.
No, he didn't let him take back. He says, he took him back to the sea. He says, by the way, you're not crossing over. You're not crossing over. You can't go back there. Because the people kept thinking and remembering how wonderful it was. Right. Well, it wasn't that bad. At least we had houses to live in. We had homes. Mom and Dad were there. Now they're starting to die off here. And I don't want to go much farther. That's almost three. I want to go one more place. And this is the ninth. I think it's either 10th place or 9th place. I lost my number. And the other place is called Hazerot. Hazerot. Pretty odd word, don't you think? Remember, they left that place. They had to bury the dead who lusted, complained to God. They wanted different kind of something else to eat. So he took them to a place, the translation has it as settlement. Actually, the word means a yard, a land that is fenced in. He took them to a place where he fenced them in. Now, after they have buried their dead, do you think they were sorry? Temporarily, yes. And so God gave them a wonderful place and fenced them in. It came a place where they were being protected again. So here is God, merciful, understanding, and compassion in this particular case, right? So he gave them a place for safety for a short period of time. It didn't last very long. I'll tell you how long. It's the only place that's listed is right here in Numbers, so we don't know exactly all the things that took place. But it means to be enclosed by, be surrounded by, like a fence or a hedge or a protection from elements or outside things that could happen to you. As you're heading toward the north, slowly heading toward the north, what God has in mind. Now, in our life, in your life, in our lives, even as a group of people or as individuals, what are we learning here? Yes, we're learning history again, learning information again. Yeah, we've gone through this song and dance before. Yeah, what is it that we're learning? What is it that we need to learn? What is it we need to understand? Be obedient to God. Respond to what he said. Hearken unto and respond. Shema. A good word.
Trust. Trust
God. Believe that what he says he will do. Okay, it's the best terminology.
The Lord.
I talked to your daughter about that. She says, "I believe God." I says, "That's not good enough." Oh, because that's not what the word means. You've got to trust him. She says, "Well, I trust him." Uh-huh. When he takes you someplace, you say, "I believe you, God." And God says, "Oh, you do? Oh, do you really trust me?" Because that's the Hebrew word, and I think it's also the Greek word, if I'm not mistaken, trust. Do you trust God? Do you trust him? God is going to find that out. How did he find it out? Or giving it over here, and you respond to it because you trust him. And therefore, you'll be blessed. Do you understand what I'm saying? What did Abraham do? He trusted God. By the way, that's later on in his life when God said, because of what he did, he now, I call unto him righteousness. It didn't start in the very beginning when he was 75 years old. It came much later. He believed God and he trusted God that God was going to carry out his promise. Now, let me ask you a question. Did Abraham see the conclusion of the promise? Did he trust God? Did God fail him? Okay. That's how we have to be in the very same mode. Joy told me this when we were out there in the hallway. There was a talking to a Jewish acquaintance or individual. And they got in a conversation about Passover, got a conversation about Yom Kippurim and Shavuot, all that kind of stuff, all the way down to Sukkot. And she was amazed. If I paraphrase, I'm not quite sure exactly what it was. But this Jewish lady, because she, I think Joy used the word, the Messiah said that the law, not law, not whatever, she recorded that, right? She turned around and said, the Messiah said he did not do away with the law. I says, she said the word Messiah? She says, yeah. So she's reading apparently out of the New Testament. Very, very Jewish in her world. But it's quite amazing, you know, trust him. And believe him. Do you really believe what has taken place? This also comes down to, in the very beginning here, when God led them out of Ramses, he didn't take them to a wonderful, most gorgeous place on the face of the earth. That wasn't his plan in the first place. He took them to a place. They gave them temporary shelter and a thicket where all of them could be in a thicket, away from being seen, being noticed that they were there. I don't know. Wasn't there. I wasn't there to find out. I know. And then it goes from there on, and we keep on going here to the very point we're at right now. We're now at another place now where you could put them in a yard or in an area, a place that's fenced in. So what I'm trying to say, I guess, watch and understand the best you can. See what God is doing. Try to keep as much as it's possible on seeing what you are doing, what your husband's doing, what your wife is doing. But start seeing what God is doing with you. Start seeing what God is doing with your wife. Start seeing what God is doing with your husband and with your children. Instead of, okay, I got to make a judgment here. I don't like that person. See what God is doing with that person. As we look at the history of the places where they are dwelling, we're seeing a history of what God does. Did He finally deliver them to the Promised Land? Yes, He did. And that Promised Land was a land where if you don't do certain things in there, I'm going to take it away from you. And He did. Okay. Do you trust God? A lot of people believe God. Hundreds and millions believe God. The question is, do they trust Him? Well, we can make a judgment and say, no, they don't. They didn't believe in Him. I don't want you to think that way. I want you to think of yourself saying, do I trust Him? That's a big question, isn't it? No matter how unimportant the thing is or how important it is, that's a really big issue with God. And here we have a story. We're going to go through some more names next week. See, we can't find a pattern. We can't see where God is really doing something that's showing us in these period of places where they stopped, giving us an idea of how He operates with us as individuals, and as in this case, the whole nation, including, perhaps, nations of this world that you have no idea He really is truly guiding and leading and taking them